For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country, and jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, this weekend saw devastating effects from Hurricane Helene, which has left nearly 100 dead and millions without power across the southeastern United States. The storm's unprecedented damage has triggered a massive recovery effort, with President Biden pledging support to affected regions. As the cleanup continues, political tensions, of course, remain high, with former President Trump drawing attention once again with some rather low comments about his opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris. I'm joined now by Terry Sheridan, Managing Editor with WSHU Public Radio. Terry, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Now, talk to me about the storm. I've been looking at images on television over the weekend. I mean, you've got water up to the eaves of houses, people trapped on roofs, boats washed up from the coastal waters right into people's front lawns. Extraordinary stuff.
Absolutely extraordinary. And what's amazing about this storm is much of the damage is done inland, 300 miles inland into villages such as Asheville, North Carolina, at a sea level of 2,200 feet. The 10 inches of rain, the over 10 inches of rain that fell, just absolutely devastating all the way from, you know, what they're calling the elbow of Florida all the way into North Carolina, Tennessee, and getting into Kentucky. But yes, we have 90 people dead. That number is likely to grow as they're finding people inside the houses, inside the attic, or, you know, just in North Carolina, when the water recedes, what they'll find on the streets.
Now, talk to me about the historical precedence for hurricanes and flooding like this. Is there any precedent?
There, nothing to this scale, but yes, there is, and we're seeing more and more of it. There is a path inland where hurricanes that hit Florida actually make their way up to Vermont and into the mountains of Vermont, where you see a similar thing, where it gets into the mountains, it comes down the rivers, and the devastating floods, you know, just wipe out communities.
So the question is, who pays for all the damage? I mean, when you're in an area that is prone to hurricane, can you get insurance?
It all depends. It's a very convoluted situation. Well, ultimately, who's going to pay for it is probably going to be most of the federal government through FEMA funds, Federal Emergency Management Association. But in a lot of places, you cannot get flood insurance. In a lot of places, the rules are so Byzantine that, you know, you can't. It's very hard to collect. So it'll mostly be paid by the federal government. Private homeowners, if they live near the water or on the water, they may be out of luck and may lose most, if not everything, that they have.
Now, the United States seems to have an enormous powers of speedy recovery to get power back on for people and to get the utilities running so water is not contaminated. What are they saying about this massive cleanup?
This is going to be, it all depends where you are. There's the periphery, which we'll get to first. You know, that could be in a couple of days. But in Asheville, North Carolina, or along Treasure Island in Florida, it's going to be weeks just to get power running, to get the water pumping again, to get the gas stations operational. So it's going to be 1 or 2 weeks. A dozen years ago, when Superstorm Sandy hit New York and Long Island and parts of New Jersey, it took 3 to 4 weeks to get electricity everybody up to most people, to everybody, I should say, not most people.
And there are roads destroyed, there are bridges down, and these obviously will take a bit longer to restore.
Absolutely. I mean, and you have interstate highways that have been washed away in parts. So those are the lifeline of communities. That's where all the trucks come in. That's where the food supply comes in, gasoline supplies. So that's going to be the one that's going to be bad.
Now, sometimes when you're faced with recurring disasters, you can try to maybe flood-proof your area. But, I mean, there's no way really of preempting what damage a hurricane might do.
No, absolutely. A hurricane is just, you know, if you're talking winds at, you know, 100 miles an hour, 10 inches of rain in a short period of time, the earth can't absorb all that water. Once the trees get soaked, especially if there's leaves on them, they'll come down in wind. It's just absolutely, a bad hurricane is absolutely devastating. And again, we saw that with Katrina in New Orleans, you know, almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, you're wondering when you look at it from our perspective, where all of our homes are made of concrete block, or some of them might have timber frame, but by and large, they're clad in block and brick, and they look very solid. We look at houses in the southern United States, and they seem to be, it reminds you a bit of the story of the three little piggies, and, you know, one house made of straw, and one house made of wood, and one house made of brick, and the brick one survives. And even in terms of the United States, with traffic lights hanging by cables across highways, and one of those actually dropped and killed a woman in a car, you're wondering, is there any kind of new way of looking at things that would help the survivability from some of these disasters?
Yeah, I don't know. But like you take the instance with the overhead cables, you know, yes, how much would it cost to put them underground? A lot, but that would harden the system. Again, building along the beach, is that the smartest thing in the world to do? No. Building along a creek? No. But, you know, there are certain things that it just overpowering. I mean, even if you live in a brick house and you have a basement, that's going to get flooded if there's any way for the water to get in.
All right. So America must live with its weather. I presume none of this helps people to join the dots with climate change and, you know, electric vehicles and all of that. You know, Trump versus, and we're coming to Trump and the Democrats in a moment. But that idea of espousing consumption of hydrocarbons and fossil fuels and the damage it's doing to the planet.
For a lot of people, no, there is no connecting of the dots, and they don't look at it that way. That's just, this is just the way it is. We're just unlucky. But for a lot of other people, absolutely, they're pointing at this as a symptom of climate change.
Now, all the attention this week politically is going to be on the debate between the two vice presidential nominees, and obviously we'll follow that with great interest. But in the meantime, Donald Trump on the road making speeches, and he took aim at Kamala Harris in a very fiery speech on immigration, labeling the Democratic nominee as mentally impaired. Have a listen to this.
Joe Biden became mentally impaired. Kamala was born that way. She was born that way. And if you think about it, only a mentally disabled person could have allowed this to happen to our country.
Now, that's pretty low.
Very low. And he got blowback, and including blowback from some Republicans who said, listen, you can fight her and argue with her on her positions, but something like that is just out of bounds. But again, you heard that he did get the reaction. I mean, there's a lot of other things that he was, you know, saying in the different rallies he had or different appearances he made over the weekend. One of them is let the cops have a day of action.
We have a clip on that. Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
One rough hour, and I mean real rough, the word will get out and it will end immediately. End immediately.
So,
you know, it'll end immediately.
Let the dogs loose for an hour and allow them to beat the crap out of anybody they come across, and no more trouble. This is his theory.
Yeah, no more trouble for the next year, and then they do it again, and, you know, that's it. If people know that they're going to be targeted, they won't do it. I mean, he said similar things before in the past, even when he was president. You know, when he was speaking in front of an organization of police, and he said, you know, don't be too gentle, you know, with them as you're putting them in the car. Let them bump their heads. Mm-hmm. But one of the most disturbing things that's picking up traction, and he said it several times over the weekend, was that Kamala Harris was for legalizing fentanyl, when that is exactly the opposite of what she was saying in her speeches, in which she said she wanted to go after the multinational cartels. She wanted to get money to improve the response to fentanyl, both as a result of overdoses or just to help local police. But twice over the weekend, Donald Trump said that she was for legalizing fentanyl.
Now, you wonder, I mean, when Hillary Clinton got into trouble for describing Trump supporters as a basket of deplorables, you know, there was pushback, because in that first successful election for Donald Trump, there were many people who voted for him, not necessarily realizing what would unfold with the Trump presidency and some of the madness that unfolded. But when he says something like his opponent wants to legalize fentanyl, I mean, that is so patently untrue that even the most deplorable in that basket must realize it's a lie.
You would hope and you would think, but not necessarily true. I mean, people who think would know that that is not true. But again, he's looking to rile up the crowd, and he's looking to get that reaction from them. And whether they truly believe it or not, I will guarantee that some people will repeat that. They will repost it on social media, and they will use this to point that Kamala Harris is soft on immigration, soft on the border, soft on fentanyl.
Now, tell me what the polls are saying. I mean, there are polls every day. I saw a piece Jimmy Kimmel did where he read out the result of a whole pile of different polls, all saying completely contradictory things. So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the New York Times is still putting Trump in the lead. Their poll with Siena College in the lead by, you know, fractions of percentage points. Most polls nationwide seem to find that Kamala Harris has gotten anywhere from a 2 to 3 point lead nationwide over Trump. But more importantly, they're showing that she has, in about 3 or 4 of the swing states, a very small lead. That is where the battle is going to be fought. So would you say this is still even though the momentum of the campaign has shifted, you can say that this race is still too close to call, because it could come down to 2 or 3 or perhaps 1 swing state to determine the outcome.
Now, we always hear that the vice president is a heartbeat away from the presidency. So this debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz is significant if you think of it in that perspective, that one of these guys, should anything happen to Kamala Harris or anything happen to Donald Trump were they to become president, one of these guys would become the president. So what's the betting on either of these doing well in this debate?
It's hard to say. I mean, J.D. Vance says outrageous things. So is he going to come out and be all outrageous? Then people might remember that. Tim Walz projects this Midwestern nice guy thing. You know, he's been the governor of Minnesota. So will his experience that way come out? Vice presidential debates are very rarely remembered. I mean, the one thing, you go back to 1988, you're no Jack Kennedy, that quote. Yeah. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Or last time in 2020 with the fly that landed on Mike Pence's head. But besides that, most of the time, you know, you'll have some people watching, but no one will really remember what was said 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to those polls, and how many states are now in the reckoning? Because they were at the beginning of all of this, they were talking about maybe 3 swing states. There are maybe more than that now in play.
There's about 6. I mean, off the top of my head, North Carolina, Georgia, Pennsylvania, which is key to both campaigns. You would look at Michigan, Nevada, and Arizona. Florida might even be in play. North Carolina is a key state. Pennsylvania is a key state. Any of the candidates winning both of them would pretty much be would pretty much be game over. They would have to, the opponent would have to clear everything else.
In North Carolina, Mark Robinson still running for the job of governor?
He's still running. He's saying that he did nothing wrong. This is all a setup, and he will be proven correct. But he is still in the race. He has lost most of his campaign staff. Trump has, and the Trump campaign has distanced themselves from him. He was down slightly before all this broke about the sex scandals and the comments about slavery. But latest polls show that his Democratic opponent is starting to pull away.
You know, if someone wrote 10 years ago that you'd a black man running for governor who described himself on a website as a black Nazi and who wanted to bring back slavery, you would have said this is impossible. Couldn't happen in America. But lo and behold, there it is.
But it has.
Yeah. All right, Terry.
I know.
Go on.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, if you look at everything that's happened this past year in the political realm, you would just shake your head anyway.
All right. Anyway, Terry Sheridan, thank you very much for joining us. Terry Sheridan is managing editor of WSHU Public Radio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.